I'm ready for my life to begin. I'm ready for it all to start. My heart's about to bust. Don't lead the way. I must follow my own bright star. Many a long cold night I huddled down in the dark. I made a vow, if I ever made it out, I'd follow my own bright star. Bright star, keep shining for me.
Welcome to Broadway Baby, the podcast taking one casual theater goer to full out fangirl. I am your host, Kimberly Schmidt, here with my husband, Jay Schmidt.
Hey guys!
And our baby, Alex Fasella.
Well, howdy, y'all. Let's do a bluegrass show.
Today, we are going through the 2016 musical Bright Star, one of our faves.
Yeah.
But first, has Baby met World?
Baby's met some world. First of all, my co-writer and friend since I was very young, Miles, had his birthday barbecue yesterday. And because Miles was a theater kid, as I've often talked about being jealous of the theater kids in my school, some of them were there. And it was nice getting to talk to them. We didn't really talk about theater. We just started, I was like, hey, Charlie, I remember you from singing that Think of the Time I Saved song from the Fantastics. You were good. And he's like, oh, cool. And then we just talked about how minimum wage workers should unionize. So it was very quick closure, but it was closure.
Okay.
A little bit. And second of all, I went on a little bit of a tear writing new songs for my show. Because we're right about in the draft of the script, we're closing in on the act break. And as we have gone through the script, like when we first mentioned it, even on this show to you guys, it was the kind of comedy we were making it into was like Marx Brothers insanity. Like there was jokes every 2 seconds. And now as we continue through it and try to balance the comedy and making it a parody, but with retaining the really good dramatic story of the Patriot, it's gone from like nonsense all the time to like when South Park gets really serious, so that the heart will still be there, which is a much better tone, I think. And also we're really, really happy with it. So what I've been doing is as we finished kind of threading that needle on act two and finishing on act one, finishing that up, I've been kind of looking at what I had written for act two and just seeing like, oh, this song I wrote before we even did the story and with that much jokier tone in mind. And it was like, well, we're not doing that show anymore. So I cut it. And one of them was Heath Ledger's character and his wife, Anne. They get married and it's a really sweet scene. And I had written this kind of jokey, he ruins the wedding kind of song. And then as we've been, like I said, changing the tone and making it much better and more heart to it, I was like, hey, if I, with my little soft boy romance, write a song about a wedding in my musical that I have control over and it doesn't make you cry, I fucked up.
Yeah.
So I wrote a much sweeter song that was a, so the song where they fall in love, they already kind of know each other, but they fall in love in this one song where she, it was that kind of college rock song I told you guys about, where she kind of explains, progressivism to him, and that's what kind of puts him over the edge and he falls in love with her mind. And so I made it a very pared down nice orchestral version of that song, because of course that would be their wedding song, would be the song they fell in love to, but in a different tone. And then if I say what happens to them by the end of the show, it would spoil the whole movie, but I took that song again and I made it sad to the point of being scary, and I'm very impressed with myself.
Yeah, I mean, a loving parody is really is going to leave a much more of an impact than sometimes you go see a parody and it's like, oh, they're parodying this because they hate this thing, and they're just ripping it to bits. Where it's like, if you can kind of like lovingly rib something, I think an audience is much more going to be on your side more.
Yeah. And it just feels better because, I still think we're accomplishing the same goal with the kind of comedy we're doing now, because my stated purpose was like, okay, this is set in the Revolution, especially it, the show deals a lot with even more so because the way we've written it, it deals with the aftershock trauma of war and PTSD and stuff like that more than the actual movie addresses.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to get that feeling like you see in some Vietnam movies where all the soldiers, when they're not in a firefight, they're just cracking jokes because it's a coping mechanism. And I still think that we're doing that. It's just now we're doing it in a way that threads it much better because the jokes are more grounded. And so there's still moments where the show is quite silly, but it still feels like we're not breaking reality to do it. Like I had originally, one of the jokes I was going to do, and I still maintain this is a good bit, but it's just not the show we're doing anymore. I thought, what if at a few different times during the show, I had, there's a moment that I am keeping in the prologue where a song where Hamilton shows up and the ensemble kind of makes fun of him and he leaves to basically say like, knock, knock, this wink, wink, this is a Hamilton parody a little bit. And I was like, what if he keeps showing up trying to turn the show into Hamilton? And I still think that's a good bit, but that is now breaking reality in a way we're not doing anymore.
Yeah.
So I was like, I love that joke still, but that's, we're just not doing that show anymore. So, yeah, I've been actually very excited and very kind of impressed with myself of like, oh, I think I've got a good handle on, I know what I like in musicals and I have a pretty good handle on at least getting close to like, I think I know how to make what I want to see in the show happen for myself, to the point where I'm almost like, am I going a little too reprise crazy or is that just good? Like it'll all shake out. But I had a little burst of creativity.
Everyone loves a reprise. You know what's also so much. You know what also goes reprise crazy? Hamilton. Phantom?
Yeah.
Yeah, Phantom. Most shows. A lot of shows. Yeah, yeah, most shows do that.
Shows that are long, reprises.
Yeah. And I try to be smart about it where like so something we even kind of played up more in the show than in the movie is Heath Ledger's character. He kind of his heart's in the right place, but his opinion is whoever got to him in the last 10 minutes. And so he kind of is very easily swayed, and that's part of his character arc. And we really played that up for our show. And so when he has the final reprise of this, of the song that basically she taught him, where it's really, really sad and scary, he is in the verses and then up to the chorus, which is just her melody. I had him mix melodies that he has heard throughout the show and synthesize them. So he's starting to have his own true opinion, but it's still built out of the ones that have rubbed off on him. And then it'll be synthesized by the end, but like it's starting to come together for him as a person, but also at the worst moment of his life, which I think is an interesting dynamic. So, guys, am I good at musicals?
We'll see.
A lot,
so. We will see.
But time will tell.
Yes. So that's all the world.
Have we met any world bird?
The other night, I just wanted to chill in our living room because Kimberly is at the shore for a girls' weekend. So I just put on the prom LP and just like had a little nice drink, made myself a cocktail, and just enjoyed the prom.
That goes to the prom?
We have too much glitter in it. We have too much rum in our bar right now, so I just was drinking rum just because we need to get rid of it.
Like straight rum?
No, not straight rum. I had like it was a little punishing. All right. But
tell us what it was. Was it an energy drink full of rum?
No, it was just seltzer and rum with a splash of lime, and it's getting the job done.
Okay. Which rum?
I don't even know. Well, they're nice rums. They're just like someone like was clearing out their liquor cabinet. And they were like, we have too much. They like don't have enough room in their liquor cabinet anymore. And they're like, we went to like Puerto Rico and bought all these like gourmet rums. Do you want some of these bottles? And I was like, sure. And so we just have them.
Yeah.
But
blackstrap rum I liked in the wintertime.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. So I listen to the prom. I can't stop listening to the prom. It's like the one show I keep coming back to.
Yeah, I'll get to it when we get fully into Bright Star, but I feel like their endings are almost similar in a way that's like everything worked out, but they've earned it along the way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously it's a much different tone of a show, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been meeting world in that we keep talking about what shows we want to go back to when shows start coming back.
Yeah.
What's on y'all's list?
6. Well, I have tickets to see Company in November.
Ooh.
Oh, I get, but I don't.
No, I was going to get you one too, but no, I don't have it yet.
No, you weren't. No, you
weren't.
I kept
thinking about it. And then as I was saying it just now, I went, I never told him about this and we've never made
it. Yeah, this is the first I'm hearing of it.
Oh, no.
Welcome to doing a podcast with a married couple.
Wow. Brian, no, Kevin, and fine. I all have tickets. And we
you get to, Jamie, it's
Jamie
fine.
Can sit together somewhere else.
I've already made peace with the fact that you get to see all the good shows and I sometimes get to come. It's okay.
But the things that are opening first are like Hadestown, Come From Away, 6, Wicked, Lion King, Hamilton. So like of the first batch of openings.
Okay.
Well, question, keep saying we should see 6 because it was the one show we got canceled on.
Yeah, that was
we were supposed to see it on March 18th.
Yeah, ooh. We were supposed to see it like early. And yeah.
In previews. Yeah. Oh, wait, no, because they closed on their opening night.
Yeah, we were supposed to see it in like their first week and it was just like, ah, crap.
Yeah.
But
and, like weirdly, I feel like is almost good that they closed on their opening night because then they weren't in this weird Tony season.
I think I actually think they dodged a bullet.
Yeah.
Because I think because if they
now, had, I wonder if that was part of their, well, I know, no, everyone closed that night, but
if they had already opened, they may not have come back.
Mm-hmm. West Side Story is not coming back. Did you hear that?
No.
Yeah.
Oh, all right.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
They would have opened like a month before the movie came out. And I think they're like, it's too much.
Yeah. Do we know like how they decided like who was coming back and when? I mean, because it seems like there's two stages to it. Was there like in a fit, like a meeting and they all just like picked, or is this individual productions?
I think it's individual productions and like how fast they could kind of get everything up and running, which probably is how fast they could get a lot of their investors back. How fast they could get all of their cast back.
Yeah.
There are a few shows that like people are coming back to the show, but not till November. People are coming back to that are starting with an opening cast and then moving on, or like someone's coming back just for a day. And now all of a sudden they're unclosing shows like Waitress.
Yeah, so it'll also be interesting to me. It's like, oh, we have more time with Jenna. That's good.
Into it.
Yeah. I weirdly want to see that again.
Yeah. Let's all go.
Yeah. Kevin bought himself tickets to Waitress. That's his first show back.
I think that's a great first show
just
back.
Alone.
We talked about 6, but I don't know. I don't know if that's like the right show.
First thing. Yeah.
I don't think it is. I want to see Come From Away.
I agree with you. I saw a commercial for Come From Away for the live cap yesterday and like started to cry watching the commercial. And I went, I want to see it.
Yeah, I feel like we were talking about this earlier. I feel like there's some healing in that show. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's something to that being the first show back in a way that I.
And it's like a very community centered show. They're kind of talking to the audience, even though there's no participation. You feel very involved in that, the lives you're watching.
Yeah. Because like the vibe, you know, there is live performance certainly has like a certain energy to it. And I feel like that show encapsulates its energy quite well.
Yeah. And it's also a show about mutual aid. And if we've lived through anything, it is a period of mutual aid right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's best, you know.
Oh, I did meet World. Have I talked about going to the Majestic yet?
No.
No.
I went to the Majestic Theater, which is the last Broadway theater I was in because I saw Phantom on Broadway.
Oh, yeah.
Days before the shutdown. And then I went to the premiere of a new documentary called The Show Must Go On, which is about the companies of Cats and Phantom that were running in Korea in the spring of last year.
Oh, okay.
Like during COVID and like going through it. But there were live performances on either end of the documentary. Josh Groban.
Okay.
We were just talking about him because he plays with the Grateful Dead now, which I didn't know. And I thought that was
fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Josh Groban came out and sang Can We Start Again, Please? From Jesus Christ Superstar before the movie started. And then a bunch of singers came out and sang As If We Never Said Goodbye from Sunset Boulevard to end the night.
Like
Sierra Boggess and Ariana DeBose, Adrian Warren. It was fun. But I will say, haven't missed Tiny Seats.
Yeah.
I was thinking, I was like, oh no, I have to shift.
Yeah.
I haven't done this in a while.
I always forget that that theater is called the Majestic because in my head it's just the Phantom Theater.
Yeah. And the Majestic is that Jim Carrey movie in my mind.
That's what I always think of every time. Yeah. I'm not proud of it, but it's
when you said the Majestic, I was like, what movie did you see? But I guess you did see a movie, but it's
totally... I did see a movie. But yeah, I think of the Majestic, I'm like, oh, in a quaint town in Long Island, like New England somewhere.
If for it's April Jim Fool's Carrey. Day, the Majestic just ran the movie The Majestic, people would be so angry, and I would have so much respect for them.
That would be funny. I also think Phantom's opening late, which is also
surprising. It is, yeah.
Because I watched a whole documentary about how Andrew Lloyd Webber was like, let's just do it.
Yeah.
So it's surprising that they're coming back later. It will be, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see all of these things and like protocols that are happening, not just like vaccines and stuff, but they all decided as a whole to not share grosses anymore.
Oh,
because they used to publish the weekly gross of every show on Broadway, like on the Broadway League, and like Playbill would just publish their grosses. And they've decided to not do that for the foreseeable future because it just won't look good.
Okay.
Like to like have that kind of competition right from the start. And like, you don't want to scare people off like, oh, they're not making any money. So they must not, people must not be seeing the shows or I don't know.
Yeah.
I think it's a good call. Yeah.
Okay.
And you don't want to scare investors off. Because yeah. It's not like, this is not the time to be like, look at all the money we're making. This is the time to be like, look, we're here.
No, because they're not, we're I mean, open. Yeah.
And a lot of shows are going to 6 shows a week instead of 8 because of COVID. So they're not going to look like grosses just aren't going to look the way they used to. And so why tell people?
I think 6 shows a week is actually a better schedule, but that's neither here nor there.
I mean, yes.
8 shows a week is so punishing because let's be real, 8 shows a week, if you have a star in there, they're only doing 6. Plus, mm-hmm. I mean, you know what I mean? It's not.
And everyone's tired.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. So I think 6 shows a week is fine.
Yeah.
That's all the world we've met.
Yeah.
Anyone else? Joey, word of the week? Anyone else? Like
word,
someone else?
Word of the week? You set us up for a call and response, Kimberly, and then
there's a Zoom lag and I didn't hear it in time. Oh my goodness. We are going to talk about folk tales, specifically American.
Nice.
So a folk tale is a tale or legend originating in traditional a tale or legend originating and traditional among people or folk, especially one forming part of the oral tradition of a common people, any belief or story passed on traditionally. And so Bright Star is based on a folk tale.
Yeah.
I thought we would just talk about some.
I looked it up a little bit. It's an actual kid that was thrown from a train and lived. And
yeah, the Iron Mountain baby.
Yeah, lived to be like 50, which is still sad, but like, okay, you know. Got some more time at least.
Of the time, I mean, I'm sure that was probably a...
Yeah, because the Bright Star is set much later than it actually happened. It was like late 1800s, I think, when this kid was actually born.
It was in... Let's see. I have the thing pulled up. Oh, yeah, it was late 1800s.
Yeah.
But I think he married someone in the 30s.
I love a folk tale because... You can, first of all, it's just cool where the history comes from and what certain things mean to a culture and watching those be passed down. But also you can retcon stuff that wasn't there, but may have been implied that just makes the story better for the next generation or for the next pop culture iteration, whatever it ends up being.
I always loved learning about like oral history and oral traditions because things get to become like tall tales. Like for instance, when you look up folktale examples, like American folklore, you get Paul Bunyan and like all of these people. I recognize all of these names. I don't remember anything about them. Johnny Appleseed. What did he do?
What? You don't know Johnny Appleseed?
Is he the one that had an apple on his head?
No, he had the pot on his head and he will go around planting all the apple trees.
Oh, Johnny Appleseed.
Johnny Appleseed. I don't know why I'm upset that you don't know who he is.
Sorry.
I feel like...
What a niche fight.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like growing up in the Midwest and stuff, like Johnny Appleseed was like, like we thought about Johnny Appleseed.
I don't even know how the story goes, but I understand just from context what the premise is.
Like where I'm from, kids would like go as Johnny Appleseed for like Halloween and stuff. Yeah.
What did he look like?
He wore a pot on his head, and that's the extent of my knowledge.
Oh, I guess I can picture that. I also wanted to bring this up to talk about one of my favorite films as a child, Tall Tale.
Yeah.
Are we all familiar?
Maybe. Yes. What's it about?
It's where folk heroes come to life with, who was in it? Pecos Bill, John Henry, Calamity Jane, and Paul Bunyan, and his loyal blue ox Babe.
Maybe I've seen this. I don't know.
I don't remember anything about it other than just like all
he rides the he rides the tornado.
Oh yeah, he rides a tornado.
Yeah.
It was in like the same VHS like shelf as like the Indian in the cupboard.
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Just those like true mid 90s.
Oh yeah.
Classics.
I think about the Indian in the cupboard maybe once every couple of days.
When you open the cupboard?
I just think about the concept of the magic being in the cupboard, and then if I would always think about you could put things in the cupboard, and then if the Honey I Shrunk the Kids, Honey I Blew Up the Kid universe exists, you could make things real in the cupboard and then use the giant ray to make them big, and that's how you could get lightsabers. You just put the toy lightsaber in the cupboard, you make it real, and then you make it way bigger. Because I always think about when you put the Darth Vader toy in there, and then it was like, and I was like, well, then that's how you get a real lightsaber. Duh. Also, a large amount of like my thinking as a child was, how do I get a lightsaber?
This is what that seems like.
How do I get one? And I still think about it all the time. I'm like, man, he was like, I could put all my little friends in. You're telling me I could put all my little tchotchkes in the cupboard and they come to life and they're my buddies? That sounds great.
But then they're cursed like Pet Cemetery.
Who cares? Not air. Like, they're no, too little.
Funko Pop Willy Wonka, put down the knife.
Yeah, they're too little to do anything about it. Yeah, I love my little Funko Pop Willy Wonka.
Yeah.
They're too little to do anything. A little bolt. Yeah, it's also how you get real Pokemon. Come on now. A little Bulbasaur? Ah.
And the and also the potential for genres to mix is it's built. I want to see Willy Wonka ride a Venusaur, and we can make it happen.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they fight
this
the Reservoir
Dogs.
This is
the next generation for the Lego Movie people.
Yes.
We are wildly off topic.
Yes. I just now that mentioning you mentioned John Henry. I think folktales are also kind of that sweet spot in between fairy tale and like. And current day like pop culture fiction, where some of them still end really sadly, but they're still supposed to be for kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like they're all like a little dark.
Like, yeah, like John Henry beats the steam engine, but his heart explodes.
Yeah.
Like he dies.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. He beats it. He beats the engine though.
I didn't remember that part.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's right. Yeah. My question is,
it's a dark examination of the industrial period, pretty much that story.
And it's also kind of like it's the middle of the Venn diagram between, I feel like a lot of folk tales they're based in some semblance of reality. Like there's some kernel of the story that's of like truth.
And American folk tales, because I'm looking at this list of like well-known folk tales, and some of them are like Rapunzel and Sleeping Beauty. And I'm like, well, those are fairy tales. Different. But I guess like European folktales are thousands of years older than like an Americana Appalachian folktale.
Yeah, it seems like
of course would have started in 1910.
Yeah, it seems like American folk stories have more of that like element of truth, like Jay was talking about, where it's like, oh, you can actually look up the real Iron Mountain Baby
because we're closer to it.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Like Sleeping Beauty was in like 1300 something, the real, you know, quote unquote, real one.
Yeah, yeah,
so, of course, it's so far away that you couldn't look up still is true.
As far as Bright Star, I can only think of one other show that's based on American folktale specifically.
And what is that show?
Floyd Collins.
Oh,
is Floyd Collins a folktale?
I mean, it's a true story, but I mean, it's, you know, it's I would say
it's
that totally Floyd
like
Collins
in the show.
Floyd Collins through the musical becomes a folktale. Like it's a true story, but
it's told in like the style of
in such a grandiose fashion that it becomes a little bit more Whereas I think also Bright Star kind of achieves the same thing. It's like, it's funny that the American musical is such, it's such an American style of, it's a truly American art form that like, it almost, we're taking some of these stories and turning them into an American folktale by making a musical about them.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, that's very true. And a lot of them, like the Iron Mountain Baby is a folktale, and then it became a folk song, because that is a lot of how the oral tradition would continue, is these like long epic poem type songs. And hence bluegrass becomes a lot of that. And so it's fun that like they found, like Steve Martin and Edie Brickell found this old folktale, made their own bluegrass folk song about it. And then we're like, it's a musical.
Yeah.
Can we think of any other folktale musicals offhand? Because I feel like I would like to know what they are, because I'm sure I've heard them, but I can't process them right now.
I've been thinking about it, and it's the only I think Finian's Rainbow.
Okay.
Well, that's not American.
It's still folktale, though.
Does it count if it's an American musical but from another country's folktale? Because Hadestown is a Greek myth, which those are like the original.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it gets a little
muddy if you can like go back.
The only true one that I can think of, and I think it's actually fun because the characters are aware that they're in a folktale the entire time. Brigadoon.
What?
Like they are like, it's one of the shows where like they're aware, the people in Brigadoon are like aware that it's happening to them. You know what I mean? It's like
they're in magic, but I guess they're in
folklore, if you will.
But it's like a classic folktale, like the concept of Brigadoon, and then they turned it into a show.
And they're like, and they explain it, I guess.
I don't know, but that's the closest thing I can think.
I'm also very impressed when a story is like based on an old folktale, but it's wildly different. Like Frozen is the Ice Queen. But yeah. Only in like the barest sense, or yeah. Like how She Loves Me was that like Hungarian play or something.
Yeah. I mean, the only other show I can think of that would maybe be an American folktale, and it's a classic American story. The Wedding Singer. It's an old classic song. It's a classic story of, you know, the wedding singer. And then really just, although we can take a minute and just appreciate how really good The Wedding Singer as a musical is, actually.
Yeah. I'm looking up like other folktales, and I'm like, you think there's a Headless Horseman musical somewhere?
Oh, there's gotta be.
Probably.
There's gotta be.
Sasquatch is American folklore.
What you brought up is, I think, a very important thing to analyze, which is there is also a weird, just ever so gently touching Venn diagram between folktale and conspiracy theory. Now you're into cryptozoology a little bit, which I'm kind of here for.
I'm looking up some more things. The White Lady. Have you heard of the White Lady tale?
No.
She's a ghost reportedly seen in rural areas and associated with some local legend of tragedy. Common to many of them is the theme of her losing or being portrayed by her husband or fiance. Is that what The Woman in White is about?
Girl, I don't know. Your face right now. You're just really swinging for the fences.
I'm just really thinking, like, well, that sounds like it could maybe be, but I'm not entirely sure. Folk songs. Let's see. The Star-Spangled Banner, The Ballad of Casey Jones.
I think we're also missing a very clear example from one of our recent episodes. Red, White, and Blaine is 100%.
Yeah.
It's absolutely a folktale musical.
Of course, a folktale musical.
Yeah.
Stars Hollow, the musical.
I will say one show that I think actually like gets close to it in a weird way, in the way that it's kind of like structured and the way that they kind of like have narrators and things like that. Toxic Avenger is kind of, I think, like flirting with the idea of being like a modern American folktale.
They even like call that out because he is in his like John Mellencamp song.
Yeah, because even like the old Troma movies are like, they're building off of like this, like, you know, this like hyper like legend legendary like idea of New Jersey and like the you know, that like weird New Jersey kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right that like musical theater just lends itself to creating an American folktale. Cause I'm even thinking of like Come From Away and Hands on a Hard Body.
Oh yeah.
Just like that's Americana. Yeah.
Hands on a Hard Body is actually a great example. And I actually am a strong proponent of that show. My mom and I saw that. We had a great time. I really liked that show. You know what I mentioned when you had Jay Armstrong Johnson on Broadway the other day, I just wanted to be like, hey, we really liked that show. You were great in that. Just to
singing a song from it at his concert on September
1st. It really was it was a fun show. But I think that's a great example because because it's hyper realistic, but it tells it in such a way that really, really created a total vibe of an American folk. I'm into that.
And it's like how we're saying, you know, musicals, the whole point is you blow smaller moments up into this big poetry thing. So like, that's what doing a folktale is you find the fact and then it just snowballs into this greater legend. And it's like, oh, well, this art form is almost designed to crank those out once you feed information into it.
But of this genre, Floyd Collins is the masterpiece and there's no beating it.
Yep.
Yeah. But we can also then just segue into talking about Bright Star coming from an actual crazy folktale of a baby being thrown from a train, which is something that really happened in Missouri in the turn of the century.
That's a Missouri thing?
It was Missouri, yeah.
Oh.
Salem, Missouri. I don't know where that is.
That's my state.
I know.
Yeah. We're going there next weekend.
I know. I think they're crossing St. Louis and he was thrown from the train.
Okay. So, well, all right.
We'll have to see if there's a marker.
Maybe. Oh, my mom would love to go see a historical landmark.
That is very true. We should find one.
Yeah.
Anyway, Bright Star. Premiered on Broadway in 2013, and it was inspired by Steve Martin and Edie Brickell's collaboration on the album Love Has Come For You, which was the folk story of the Iron Mountain Baby, which I really like that song. Did you either of you listen to that song?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of the concert version, and they opened it with it. I only watched the beginning and first couple songs, but yeah, I really, really liked it.
Yeah, I watched it today and you can hear like all of the elements that kind of become the score of the musical. Okay, so Bright Star opened, let's see, in 2016. I think it got semi-mixed reviews. I think some people were not too thrilled that a baby was thrown from a train.
Okay, if I'm being honest, it's what made me interested to cover
fairy it. Eyes.
Like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Where did it do its out of town?
Huh?
Where did it do its out of town?
I believe in DC at the Kennedy Center.
Yes. Okay, cool.
So it opened at the Kennedy Center December of 2015 and then was in the Court. It did previews in February, opened March 24th, 2016.
The Court Theater. Alex, you were asking about that earlier, what theater was in. It was in the Court Theater, now that we know.
It was in the Court, of course.
Okay.
which is on the other side of Broadway. Which is always farther away than you think. So I believe Jay and I were like running.
Oh yeah, we sure were. Oh yeah,
ran to get there.
Yeah, the ticket people.
Don't throw him off the train yet.
Yeah, the ticket people, like the what's the service?
Ushers.
No. The we got the tickets from like the people that are outside, and because we bought
today
them off that service.
Oh, today ticks.
They were about to leave. They were like, "Oh yeah, you're here. We didn't think you were coming." Like,
we had dinner down the street.
I show up to those things honestly sometimes before they get there. That's how that's how much ticket anxiety I just have.
I've gotten we'll see what it's like when we get back to Broadway. I'll probably be early again. But I'd gotten pretty brazen with what time I would arrive to the theater.
Mm-hmm. Just rolling them.
I'm like, everyone has assigned seats. We'll get there when we get there. Which I still believe to be true. But now that you have to show some extra documentation to get in.
Yeah, for real.
It's now very good to be early. The show only ran a couple of months. It closed on June 26th after 30 previews and 109 performances. You could consider it a flop, I suppose. Actually, yes, you absolutely could consider it a flop.
Wow.
Then it went on tour in 2017 with a good chunk of the original cast. with Carmen Cusack, AJ Shively, Jeff Blumenkrantz, Stephen Lee Anderson, who plays AJ's dad. And then in 2019, the first high school performed it.
It actually did quite well on tour.
I think so because, and Alex, like you said, there was that reunion concert, which was just in December of 2019.
Yeah.
Or 2016, rather. So it closed in June. And then in December, there was enough like residual people who were so sad it was gone that they did a mm-hmm. reunion concert to promote the album.
Yeah.
And Brian and Kevin and I went. Were you with us too, Bird?
No, I don't think so.
No, I went.
Oh, that's fun.
And as Jay and I talk about, well, we can get right into personal histories, but Jay and I will both say that it was the beginning of our, not the beginning of our relationship, but it was definitely like, it really encapsulates the year of us being engaged because we got engaged in December 2015. And then Broadwasted had started and we initially, I forget exactly the turn of events, which one of our first episodes was AJ Shively. And then just bright star.
Oh, yeah. Huh? Was, the AJ Shively episode.
That turned into me eating your hair at Korean barbecue.
Just don't drink a whole bottle of Prosecco before you on an empty stomach. That's the moral of the story.
And then tequila shots from Brian afterwards.
No.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
You take one really folktale away from this podcast. It is
The folktale of Broadwasted's early days is really something to behold.
Yeah.
But AJ was one of our first episodes. And we hadn't seen Bright Star yet. And then slowly Bright Star just kind of became like the mascot of Broadwasted in some ways. Oh, yeah. We had Hannah Ellis who played Margot on the day after the Tony Awards, in which we all, I'm pretty sure, just drank 5 bottles of water each because we were all so hungover. Yeah. Jay, if you recall the first Tony Award episode of Broadwasted.
I don't. That's the fun part. And I was the guest. That's the fun thing.
We just played a drinking game during the Tonys and recorded an episode in Brian's bedroom and it is so awful.
Yeah, I've been trying to get more involved. What were you going to say, Alex?
I believe that's when Jay declared himself officially enemy of the show.
Yes, 100%.
I was a fan of that.
I've been trying
that's
to
when that started.
Invest more and spend more time on Instagram. And I was going back through my old posts and I saw all of my posts from that night. And I was like, whoa,
yeah.
Whoa, yeah. Whoa.
That was an evening.
Uh-huh. You do look like you're having fun though. So that to be fair.
Although, and you also, at one point you had Carmen Cusack on the show, National Treasure Carmen Cusack.
Yes.
And that's the one time
after the show had closed.
And I've never done
that.
I did. And I did. I specifically showed up because she was there and I never do that. But I was like, I want to meet Carmen Cusack. I was like, I want to meet her. I do. I really do. She was. Here's the thing.
Tell us,
Cynthia,
what she did.
Cynthia 100% deserved to win the Tony that year. But it is like a shame that Carmen did not get any other year, Carmen wins that Tony hard.
Yeah.
Hard.
Maybe that should be the first show we see back, Flying Over Sunset, with Carmen Cusack.
I mean...
At the Beaumont.
I mean, yeah.
I wouldn't be against it.
I would not be against it either.
But Jay's ruse for coming to meet Carmen Cusack is that we rented a studio space in the same building to rehearse our first dance.
Uh-huh.
And we told her what our first dance is going to be, and she said, I think you should do What Could Be Better. And we did. We changed our first
dance. Yeah, we changed our first dance.
Because Carmen Cusack told us to.
Because our first dance wasn't working. Yeah, the song we picked wasn't working. And Carmen was like, you should just What Would Be Better. It's a great first wedding song. And we're like, oh. And then we did it. And I was like, no, this is perfect. Yeah, listening through it, over the past couple of days, I was like, yeah, it just like immediately takes me back to our courtship and our like... It's nice. It's a good feeling.
Yeah, it was very nice to listen through. And I was like, oh, wow. Like the beginning of like so many things were happening. While the Bright Star was the soundtrack of my life. And then Jay and I did see Bright Star. And one of our favorite audience interactions was this girl had clearly brought her parents. Like she was clearly like in school in New York City and her parents came in to visit and she was like, let's go see this show about banjos.
It's Steve Martin. You love Steve Martin.
It'll be hilarious.
At intermission, after they throw the baby from the train, and like blackout. This girl just turns around and goes, I'm so sorry. I just saw like fun banjo music on the commercial and I thought this would just be fun. And they were like, wow. And Jay and I were just like openly weeping. Like, this is the most beautiful thing we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Alex, have you ever heard of this before we told you about it?
No, I heard about it because you'd mentioned that Bright Star was involved in your first dance. I didn't know what song, which I was going to ask you about on this one. So, I had heard the name from when we mentioned it. And then on a different episode, I believe it when we covered Act Breaks, Jay was like, you got to throw the baby from the train. I was like, huh? And you're like, yeah, it's Bright Star. We'll get to it. And so once I realized there was a show where the act break was throwing a baby from a train and having it live, and I was like, yes, please. So I went and listened to it like a couple days after, and then really enjoyed digging into it for this. I really, really liked it. I wanted the book because the album I really enjoy, but you don't really get the story just from the album, which is fine. That's just some shows work better for that than others. So I watched a high school do act one, thinking the algorithm of YouTube would then click me over to act two. Act one was very good. And then they hadn't filmed act two for some reason. So I watched a different high school part of act two, but that one was so bad. I clicked to a third high school. I was like, yeah.
How Madison does it work high school high was nailing schoolers?
It. It's the same show, but they because the budget is not there, it was interesting to see how each school would portray. Yeah, like the first one, even honestly, the one that I think did the show the best, but I thought did the baby moment kind of the worst because it didn't really do anything with it. It just the cast was really nailing it. They just had the dad hand the briefcase to a guy in the audience, which to me isn't very evocative.
No, that makes it look like he did adopt him to someone.
Yeah, yeah, it's the wrong message. But then the best that I saw was he tosses into the audience and then ensemble around holding them at an angle is spinning suitcases. And I was like, that's so cool.
Oh, yeah.
They imply that it's spinning down badly. And I thought that was a really cool choice. And that little melody is so cool. You're like, no, yeah. And even if you know he lives, you live that moment along with it, and it's just so interesting to me. It's such a cinematic moment that it's like, hey, it's on the director to choose how do we portray this where that threads the line between this is harrowing and not. Oh, that like I remember you were telling me in previews that there was a thud, and it's like wrong answer. We can't hear it hit the ground. That's too evocative of what actually happened. But
yeah.
So it's like a fun little puzzle, I think, for every director to decide, like, how do we do this where it's just thrilling enough, but not like, oh, shit, and not like so upset.
And like, how magical do you make it?
Yeah.
Because it is like a tall tale kind of thing that this kid survives a fall in a suitcase.
Yeah. I don't know. For me, there's just so much. The first act is so based in. It's too close to, at least from a musical's perspective, a little bit of reality that when like that happens, it doesn't feel like a folk tale to me. It doesn't feel like fanciful. It's just like, guy throwing a bait, like woof. Like, yeah. I don't like, it feels, there's too much realism to it in a way that when we saw it on Broadway, it was a cool effect. If you just like step back from it, like he's on the back of the train and he throws the thing up and it hits a certain point and then everything freezes, but then the bag just keeps spinning. And then it was blackout in a way that was like,
I don't think it needed to spin.
It didn't need to spin.
I think that was part of it. Like, cause that's what seemed not as safe. If it just kind of floated down to the ground somehow.
Yeah. Kimberly and I were talking about this over this past week. I feel like this is the one time in any musical or stage production where I think it would actually be more evocative to tell rather than show.
Okay. How would that
I think it's the kind of thing where you have this scene in the train car and they talk about the bridge coming up. Mm-hmm. And I think that like the grandpa, he disappears out the back of the train, like, and it's off stage. And then he comes back, like the scene keeps going and he comes back in and someone just mentions like, didn't you have a bag? And he just like very quietly sits down. He's like, oh, I don't know what you're talking about. And like sips his drink and just stares out the window.
Okay.
And then blackout. Like, I think that's way, or it, even if
like
you don't have
a Titanic moment, it does.
I think it's off stage. I think it's just all in his face when he's just like, no, I didn't have a bag. And then just kind of like remedies what he just did. You know what I mean? I even if it's like a, if you're making a movie of it, I think it's even more evocative because you can pull into like, you can see it in his body language. Like, what did I just do?
And then he does later in act two, tell his son right before that song Heartbreaker.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I think there's a lot of I just don't need you. I don't need to see that.
I think that that would work, but also if I'm being 1,000% honest, if you're telling me there's a show where there's a baby thrown from the train and I don't see it, what am I doing here? I really want to see it. That's just
really
my, yeah. That's what made me want to listen to the show.
I don't know.
I want to see it.
I just think
a lot of people not want to listen to the show.
Yeah. The music is so beautiful in this show, and even listening through, I was like, oh yeah, this score is just so good. I just like all of these songs.
So pretty.
Yeah. And also like from a certain perspective, all these songs are so easy to sing. And that's not me saying that they're like, that I'm not like taking away from the performances and that like, I was like, ah, everyone sounds so amazing on this score because it just sits in the pocket for everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's not easy to do.
This show is a very nicely tended to catcher's mitt. Like,
yes.
Ooh.
Yeah. It just feels good in your hand. It's just like, mm-hmm. It folds in the right places. It's just like, mm.
Yeah.
But then you throw a baby from a train.
The song right before the baby's thrown from a train.
Huh?
A man's gotta do what a man.
That's tough. It's real tough.
So if there's anything tougher in the show for me, the lyrics are a little rough sometimes, but also the music is so good and the story so earnest, I let it go. But like, I listened to it once and I was like, that's great, and let's do it again just with a little closer ear. I was like, oh, that's that's a little clunk. So
like what,
I can't think of any offhand, but there a lot of them don't really rhyme all that well, but not enough to make me unhappy.
Yeah, I will say the baby thrown from a train was hard to remedy, but the thing for me meant like the thing for me that like really I had a hard time dealing with while seeing Bright Star. Why is it called Bright Star? Why is it called that? If they say here's the thing, the Bright Star song, it's a great song. It has nothing to do with anything.
I think a lot of these songs may have been written before and plugged in, and it still works, but like you feel it sometimes. And I think that's where I feel it the most is like, hey, shouldn't he be singing about newspapers or text or something?
Yeah.
No, it's Bright Star. Okay.
Yeah.
Or like tie the theme of Bright Star into multiple different things of like, oh, my child is my Bright Star.
Yeah, but who cares? It's a fun song.
Bright Star bringing me home.
Like, yeah.
The comet that's barely in Natasha and Pierre and the Great Comet has more to do than the star and Bright Star.
100%. That was a fun moment of that was a fun train ride home. And that was, I feel like, a moment that I think kind of encapsulates like our maturing relationship. When I was just like, why is it called Bright Star? And you were just like, shut up. It's a good show. You're like, it doesn't matter. But also like, why is it called Bright Star?
You're right. I don't know. Yeah, I have no idea. I read through like the original Iron Mountain Baby poem. And there is like the last line is something about a bright world.
Okay.
Bright world doesn't work as good. Bright star is better yet.
This ends my song, the story I've told. I'll say goodbye to all until we meet around the throne in that bright world above all. So that's about heaven. So I don't know.
Man, you gotta love poems from that time period. They can't not make it about Jesus in one way or another.
Yep.
They can't not. They can't help it. It's got to be in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because, I mean, the concept of this in its own way, I mean, this is not necessarily an original story. I mean, this is kind of low-key, a little bit Moses-y.
It's very Moses-y.
Well, the original Iron Mountain Baby, his middle name was Moses.
Yep. Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Like his adopted middle name, obviously.
That's kind of fun. Yeah.
Like they found him and they were like,
oh,
they
I
named
like that.
Him.
Moses.
Apparently, so once people figured out that's what happened to him, he got kind of low-key famous, and he did not enjoy that. Like, he didn't like that that was his thing.
I'm but, sure.
What are you going to do?
But, like, that's who you are, kid.
Yep.
Like, you survived being thrown from a train.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently he had, like a dent in his head and
yeah,
was bruised real bad. Yep. Very sad.
I like that this show, I think it's very, very smartly told the way the plot unfolds, because the second song is the son learning that his adoptive mother is dead, but we don't know that yet. So our minds have checked off in the plot, like, oh, his mother is dead. So then it's a pretty solid misdirect when, even though you can kind of feel it coming because of the way the yeah. story is told, you part of your brain is still like, oh, I thought him, oh, like you can still kind of feel where he's coming from,
and
because they have tricked you with a very heartfelt song about his adoptive mother.
And in that moment, though, you're just like, why was this young kid's mom old enough to just die of old age?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like, why is his dad so old?
Yeah.
And so you get this like moment of just like, that's an interesting family over there.
I will say the one thing that, like, at listening through and like thinking back to seeing it, the one impact that this show really left on me, at least the production that we saw, mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever completely more invested in a love story than I have with Carmen Cusack's and I can't remember their character names.
Xander Nolan.
Yeah, I was. That also might be coming from the fact that I was also like very freshly and aggressively in love at that point. That I was just like, I love love. I just really bought it.
This is a show that ends in, for all intents and purposes, a classic musical double wedding, but it mm-hmm. earns it. So I'm like, yeah, yes. Please.
It 100%. Really does. Like there. Also, the one thing I've never seen such effective flashback, like when she, do you remember this, Jaybird? When she's at the beginning, her older self saying, if you knew my story, all of this, and then she just changes into a different dress and she's just 20 years younger.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it was magical.
That's the moment that should have won her the Tony.
Absolutely.
It's incredible.
And because she was able to do that so well.
She changes her dress and kicks her shoes off. And it's just, she's a different human being. And
she's
truly
a different person. And she doesn't have the weight of the world on her shoulders. And
I'm so mad you brought that up, because that was one of my little loves.
I'm always really impressed when an actor manages to, it's the same reason I'm wildly impressed by whoever plays Kathy in the last 5 years. Reverting back to before your character knew stuff that you intellectually know they're going to go through. Mm-hmm. I'm always, it's like a little bit of acting magic to me, because it's one thing to go through a story and keep adding stuff, but to be like, oh, the stuff I know now, you should have seen me before I knew it. I was a different person, and then become that. Yeah. I'm like, well done.
And like back and forth become that.
Yeah.
Because then she's like the boss at the newspaper and she's mean and that. I don't know. And I just remember the moment of her and Paul Alexander Nolan seeing each other again and like him telling her and them just like crumpling to the floor together.
Mm-hmm.
Was, yeah. I don't know, I cried a lot.
And like I said about the prom before, they both basically end in the villain falls in a volcano and everybody dance, but they both earn it in very different ways.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think this show is not perfect, but I think this show deserved more of a run than it got.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it was in a hard season. It had some blockbusters sitting around it.
Yeah.
And it was just tricky. Like, yeah. Hamilton overshadowed everything that year, and then Waitress came in and
yeah.
was also overshadowing stuff, and
yeah.
The Color Purple, and like, there wasn't a lot of room for just a small but really, really good show.
Yeah.
With a plot that doesn't have the best elevator pitch.
No, not at all.
You want to go see this show? Baby's thrown from a train, but then they find each other.
Yeah. But wait, there's like, banjos.
No, thanks. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I'm sorry, a bluegrass musical? I'll be there tomorrow.
I just think they really needed to push that it's based on a true story, because I just, that was the one thing I just didn't, I really couldn't believe that a baby could survive that. And then you have, and then I go down the rabbit hole of my mental thinking. I was like, well, how much like blunt force trauma could a baby survive? And it's like,
and you're like, how could I have Pringles at intermission? I can't be doing this.
Calculus. I hate this. I don't like it. I don't like this. I don't like where I'm at mentally right now. It's like when you think like, when you think it's like, oh, you know, like if times really got tough, could I eat my pets? Like what kind of dog would I, like, I hate this.
No.
Yeah. It's like, I don't like where I'm at right now, but like, you know, I hate it. I hate it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think knowing the kid survives just intellectually does make this work better. And it's weird because I'm normally very anti-spoilers, but there are certain elements of a plot that, like, Hamilton works because you know Aaron Burr killed him, and that's pretty much any of us were ever actually taught. So the rest of the show can't be spoiled, but you're supposed to know how it ends because it's the journey.
Yeah.
Whereas this, it's like, they might have to slip it into your program. Don't worry, he makes it. Like, that's just a little bit so that you know it's more about, oh no, look at how unloved this kid was by this grandfather, as opposed to, oh no, he's gone. Is the rest just about how sad the girl is at Chapel Hill University now?
It's okay. His dad will sing a song about frogs and tell you how he made it there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Both the dad songs are bad. But other than that, great show.
Yeah. I loved it very much. Should we go into Little Loves?
I think we should.
Absolutely.
I'll start.
Because it stole one.
Yeah, you stole. And it wasn't even really that magical of a trick, but just it was more the way she did it. She just like her dress just kind of folded back around, and she was just a completely different human being. She was magnificent. It's like one of my favorite performances I've ever seen. Her and like Michael Cerveris and Fun Home are like two of the best things I've ever seen.
Absolutely.
I just think Pour Me Another Round is one of the best like side character songs in a show, because like it really does, it's one of those like side silly fun songs that actually does kind of move the plot along a little bit, because you are seeing him like get used to like not being in the small town. It serves its purpose, but also it's like just a really fun song. And also specifically in the middle where they're like talking about like all the different kind of drinks, it just like pops in a fun way that it's like rum and coke and blah, 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 blah. It's like, ah, this is fun and I like it. Makes me feel happy and I like it.
It's interesting that the show also, I think, knows that it's like, well, we just threw a baby from the train. Can we get something happy about drinking gin and tonics?
And let's pick it up. And let's just a little bop if you don't mind. You can just get me in the right mood for this show at just the line, I had a vision. And I'm like, I'm in. Like this show has hooks, like hard. Like it just really, it's so evocative in such a short amount of time. I agree with you. Some of the lyrics sometimes are a little busted, but like just the modes of the melody are just, they sit right in that pocket in a way that just makes me feel good. You know who didn't get enough credit for this show? Hannah Ellis was hysterical in this show. She was so funny. It's nice seeing, it really is refreshing seeing an ingenue type girl that can be that funny and charming. She threw some serious like Sutton Foster vibes.
Okay.
Oh, sure.
In that show, in a way that I was like, oh yeah, she was really great. I had a minute. One of my other ones. Little Hates. Man's Got to Do is trash. Because it's, you know what it is? It's that like, there are ways to write the father in a sympathetic way.
Yeah.
That I think.
He throws a baby from a train.
Yes, but but it's more, I think that's what made it more offensive to me. That like, he did it and he, I don't buy the remorse.
Thinking he was just like, well, man's gotta do.
Yeah, I feel like if you flesh that character out, that song is better. I think it lands that whole action better. And I just don't buy any of his remorse. I don't buy him as a well-rounded character. So I just don't. Whereas you have a lot of other characters that like I'm like so invested in. And then the dad feels like a cardboard cutout that gets marched out.
Yeah, he feels like the weak link. And I actually kind of really like the melody of Man's Gotta Do, but just the way that the emotion and the way that it works with the lyrics are not that great. But I do like the melody line. I think it's fun. So I don't think it's trash, but in terms of a story beat, it doesn't really work that well.
Yeah. And I like What Could Be Better because we danced to it at our wedding.
Yeah, of course. That's my little love too, obviously.
Yeah.
Because it is ours.
Yeah, that's our song. That's a good song.
It's a good song.
Thanks for marrying me.
You're welcome anytime.
Yeah.
Want to dance again?
Yeah, I would love to. That'd be nice.
Okay.
That's a good
when
day.
I get home.
Yeah.
My little loves are Asheville, because obviously we love Hannah Ellis in our home. And Heartbreaker this time. Maybe I always skipped Heartbreaker because it's sad. But I listened to it this morning on a walk and I was just like, this poor man having to like kind of forgive his dad, but not. And
he sings the absolute crap out of that song.
Yes. And then he's like, I can never tell her. I can never break her heart. So then I have to break my heart by never seeing her again.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh, it's a whole thing. And then also I had a vision. And the Sun Is Gonna Shine Again is one of my favorite songs. Like, it's so good. It's like a wonderful entract because it's just like, we know what we did, but we are a hopeful show.
Mm-hmm.
And so join us in the hopefulness that is Act Two.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Love it. And then obviously I love her changing into the yellow dress. I love that she's in the blue dress. And then the blue dress comes back when she finds the sweater and figures out that that's her son. And then at long last, she sings the shit out of. Carmen just deserves the world. I love her. And then, of course, wouldn't be a Broadwasted person without saying that my little love is, no!
No!
There you go. Alex!
First of all, I'll piggyback on what you just said. I really love in Please Don't Take Him, the no, don't take it, especially when it becomes the harmony with a daddy, don't you let it.
Those are so good.
I love it. And it's just, I think Please Don't Take Him is one of those songs where it's like, hey, if you can listen to this and not cry, you should see somebody because something's wrong. Something is wrong. I love If You Knew My Story. It's I played it a lot. This was one of those albums where I got through to the end, but I kept restarting it just because I loved how it opened so much that I kept like stuttering on it, where I'm just like, one more time, I really like If You Knew My Story. And also it kind of works toward that folktale tone a little bit, because I know we said that it's more grounded, where it's almost like you realize like, oh, this was kind of a folk story the whole time, even though it felt really real. It sets it up framing device wise just enough that you get to have that moment with it. And I also love the way they meld you'd have a good story to tell me I'm not alone, because A, that just flows so beautifully. But also, no character says, tell me I'm not alone, without feeling so desperately alone. And I just think that's really a poignant way to go about that, where they're not going, I'm alone. There's like, tell me I'm not alone. Because in the story, it's almost like saying like, yeah, everybody's got a story. But really, she's saying like, I'm in so much pain. Please listen to me because I'm in so much pain. And then I love my last little love is that little haunting extra part, when the suitcase is tumbling. I do always get it mixed up with from Superstar, but I like both of them quite a bit, because it's like and that melody is never, if I'm not mistaken, never really repeated anywhere, but it's just so potent right there. And especially like I said, how you can choose how you want to portray that moment, and I just really loved that image of the ensemble just spinning suitcases.
Yeah, I think the moral of the story with the show is, if for those of you listening, it's like sometimes a show can just gets lost in the mix of a season, and this one I think is worth a listen to, like pretty hard. Some of these shows we do and it's like, oh, this is fun. I don't know if this is necessarily required. I think this is a little bit of a hidden gem kind of show.
Oh, absolutely. And it definitely had like a little following, I don't know, the summer that it closed, I feel like Broadway's did, and there are a lot of like social media campaigns, but there were a lot of people on the internet that loved this show and were very sad.
Yeah.
They just couldn't find its audience. And that happens, and that does not mean a show is bad.
What would the fandom of this show call itself? Bright Stars? I think that's a little too easy, but it might have
frogs.
Okay. Yeah. The spinning bags. Yeah. Or are they
is it Iron Mountain Babies?
Yeah.
The Iron Mountain Babies.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. What does Harold do at this show?
He better get out because I'm trying to cry here, Harold.
Yeah. That's if anything, true. It's like Harold, I want you to stick around and be upset by the baby getting thrown. Like, turn your phone off, sit here and be like, did that just happen? Like,
and then it'll go, I have to turn my phone off so I can pay attention.
I thought this was Steve Martin. I thought this was supposed to be fun. Where's Martin Short? There you are.
Where's Bernadette Peters with her ukulele?
Who's the wild and crazy guy in this show? Is it the baby?
I don't understand.
Oh my goodness. Is there a review?
Yep. This is from Adam Bell. And the title is Super Fun. Please leave Broadway Baby 5 stars and a nice review in your podcast app. It really helps the numbers so we can keep the show growing. And 5 stars, this says, the hosts have great chemistry and really make me feel as though I am with them in the room being part of the conversation, even though I'm at home just listening. That is nice and also a very bare bones apt description of listening to a podcast. Like, they're there, I'm here. Everyone all goes home happy.
Woo!
And everyone's doing something. All right. Sing out, Louise.
I'm ready for my show to begin. I'm ready for it all to start. My Broadway fandom burns, and every day I learn to follow my bright 5 stars. Many a lonely night I sang to myself in the dark. I'm not so lonely now. 2 friends have helped me out to follow my bright 5 stars. 5 stars keep shining for me. Shine while I pay my due. 5 stars keep shining for me when they leave a nice review. I've seen a Greenwich fly. I've seen Washington rap. I've seen content rise above when listeners put their love into a podcast app. 5 stars keep shining for me. Shine while I pay my due. 5 stars keep shining for me when they leave a nice review.
Bright Stars.